on the spiritual path gives us dominion. The dominion that was ours in the beginning, but which we have handed over to everything and everybody, instead of retaining within ourselves. We were given God-given dominion over everything on the earth, the waters and the skies, but little by little we have surrendered this dominion. We give the stars power over us in one way, and laws of infection and contagion in another way, and the calendar in another way, and the drunken driver on the road in still another way. Always we are yielding our dominion to others, either persons, things, or laws. Now, on the spiritual path, you once more assume dominion over your life. And that dominion is not assumed by using a power over anything, but by the continued inner recognition of the non-power, of that which exists as effect. Now, germs are effects, and the stars, and weather, and climate, and alcohol, false appetites, all of these exist as effects. And therefore, have no power except the power of belief that we give them. Therefore, dominion is exercised in proportion as we recognize God, Spirit, to be the only power and the only law. And therefore, true protective work is the realization that only God is power, and that which appears to us as universal belief, whether it is a belief of infection or contagion, or a belief in hereditary disease or hereditary traits, whether it is a belief of astrology or a belief of any other nature, recognize that they exist only as universal belief. Impersonalize them. Don't blame them on any person. Don't blame them on any group of persons, or any race or nationality or religion. Be very careful that you do not personalize, because what you personalize in any way will come back to your own doorstep. Because in the last analysis, there is but one self. And what you are ascribing to another, you are ascribing to yourself. And eventually, it comes home to roost. In every way, even if you see a man steal a wallet, do not call him a thief. Recognize that this is another universal belief of lack or limitation, or another universal belief of gain, or another universal belief of some form or other, and you not only will free yourself from the possibility of being robbed, but you will also contribute to the healing of the man who himself believes he is a thief. You'd be surprised at the miracles that take place when you remove the guilt from another, when you no longer hold them in bondage to the belief of whatever name or nature is binding them. In other words, by seeing the person of ugly temperament as merely a victim of universal belief tends to free them, because you are not personalizing it and you are not malpracticing. Always remember that our erroneous concepts constitute a form of malpractice. Every lie that we believe about another is really a form of malpractice upon them. You can see that in your pets in your home, your cats or your dogs. If you have ever held them in condemnation of being bad or unruly or this, that, or the other thing, watch the change in their nature. When you reverse that and mentally apologize for having believed it and realize that in their true nature, they are of the same life that you are, of the same mind and spirit, and that these erroneous traits or qualities were never of them, but are this universal belief. And you will quickly see how it is that eventually the lamb and the lion will lie down together. By stopping our malpractice of the lion. So it is then. We cannot spiritualize our own consciousness to the extent of being healers until we have sufficiently known and practiced protective work so that we start our day steadfast in the realization of one infinite power. Then the rest of the day, regardless of the appearances that touch us, whether in the form of sin, disease, death, lack, limitation, we are now in a position to reject them as of no power because we have established ourselves in that consciousness the first thing in the morning. We don't have to wait for the telephone bell to ring and bring us the news of sin and disease. We don't have to wait for the radio to tell it to us and overcome us. We don't have to wait for fear to descend upon us before we begin our treatment. We can prevent ourselves being overcome by these appearances, individual or worldwide, if we have protected ourselves in the morning. Completely freed ourselves of the belief in two powers, two laws. This is important, the subject of law. Every form of evil comes in the guise of law. There's a law of economics, you know, that says there are boom times and bust times. There are economic laws of abundance and of lack, of good seasons and bad seasons, and the upswing and the downswing. They all have laws to support them. And there are laws behind storms, laws behind tidal waves, laws behind all these erroneous phenomena of nature. But these are not law except as we accept them as law. The only law there can be is the law of God. And there is no other law because God is infinite. And therefore, God's law must be infinite, and therefore there cannot be any other laws. So then, these material laws or laws of matter, these laws of weather, laws of age, laws of infection and contagion, laws of sin and disease, these operate only on the physical and mental levels of life. And the moment you come to the spiritual level in which you recognize God as infinite being, you nullify the belief that there are laws of matter or laws of mind. The reason you can be sure that laws of matter and laws of mind are not spiritual is this. All material laws and mental laws can be used for good or for evil. Therefore, they cannot be of God. That which is of God can be neither good nor evil. It can only be spiritual, eternal, infinite, perfect. There's no such thing as a degree of good. There's no such thing as evil in the life and the law of God. Therefore, wherever you find the pairs of opposites, the good and the evil, you are dealing only either with matter or mind. The very moment that you rise above these, you find a level of consciousness in which there is not good and evil, there is only pure spiritual, infinite, eternal, harmonious being. That is life as it was in the Garden of Eden before the belief in two powers was accepted. You can see, therefore, that whether you are practicing spiritual truth in your family circle or on a wider scale, that you will not make too much of a success if you haven't gotten into the habit of starting your day immersed in spiritual truth. Then, if you live and move and have your being in God consciousness, none of these things will come nigh thy dwelling place. If you are abiding in the secrets of the Most High, none of these things will come nigh thy dwelling place. If you establish yourself in the realization of one power. Now, the completion of your protective work is done when you take this next step and realize that this power of good, this power of spirit, operates from within your own being. It does not act upon you. It works out from you and acts upon this world. In other words, you are the transparency through which the law and life of God functions, and it functions within you and out from you, so that just as the woman who touched the master's robe was healed because he was a transparency through which this presence and power of good was flowing, so does your consciousness become the transparency or the instrument through which the law of God flows out into this world. And you will quickly see how it acts upon your cats and dogs and your children and your grandchildren and on your neighbors and on those with whom you come in contact. It will not take you 6 days of this practice before it will be brought to your attention by people that you have changed, or what has happened to you, or there is something felt from within you. Remember, this can't happen if you think of God as separate and apart from yourself and acting toward you. It only comes when you accept the Master's teaching that the kingdom of God is within you, and therefore this presence and power of God is flowing out through you and from you, and it acts upon this world. As a matter of fact, it acts upon the animate and the inanimate. This presence and power of God within you draws to you all of which you may have need in your day, whether it is person or thing, or circumstance. This presence and power of God operating invisibly through you out into this world draws unto you the very people or the very circumstances or the very things of which you have need. You will notice in our class book, Metaphysical Notes, the theme running all the way through that book is, my conscious oneness with God constitutes my oneness with all spiritual being and idea. And you will find that this is absolute truth, that as you abide in this truth, the kingdom of God is within me. It is forever saying to me, Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. Thou art ever with me. We are one. I and my Father are one. And the Father is eternally saying, all that I have is thine. Thou art ever with me. We are one. The place whereon thou standest is holy ground. Where thou art, I am. Where I am, thou art, for we are one. And as you abide in that oneness, you will find that you are one with every person in the world who belongs in your life. Every person whom you can bless or who can bless you is drawn into your experience. Every circumstance or everything, from dollars to donuts, of which you may have a need, will flow into your experience without your taking thought. The only thought you have to take is the constant remembrance of your relationship to God, of the establishment of the kingdom of God within you, of the truth that all that God is, I am, all that God has is mine, all that is of the Father is mine, for we are one. Now, this, you must remember, is still your work early in the morning, before your day has started. That is why we have to awaken long before our families are up. That is why, even though we may not get out of bed, it isn't necessary if it's more comfortable to stay there. Stay there, only don't be asleep when you're doing this work, or even half asleep, because it must be a conscious knowing of the truth. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. And as you start your day, in your protection from the belief in two powers, as you start your day in the realization that power does not act upon you, it flows out from you, and it is the power of God, good, the power of spirit, the power of life. Now you are so established that the rest of the day, as negative appearances touch you, whether in your own experience or in the experience of family or friends or later patients and students, you are prepared for it. You recognize them now to be only appearances without foundation, appearances without ordination, without any empowerment from God, without any law of God to support or sustain, and you can quickly give your treatments. Now it is not a matter of a long routine, because you have prepared your consciousness, you have spiritualized it, so that it instantly recognizes a negative appearance as a nothingness, as an illusion, as temporal power having no law of God. Now this comes to the next logical point. Very few people recognize the power in silence and the power in secrecy. And the reason is this. We have really been hypnotized into a belief that there's a God somewhere, separate and apart from our own being, until we have actually forgotten that God is our very consciousness. God is our very being, our own being, that right where I am, God is, since we are one. Now the Master saw the power of secrecy and of silence, and he taught it. He said that when you pray, you were to enter your sanctuary, not to be seen of men, but to be alone and to pray in secret. And then he said, your Father that seeth in secret will reward thee openly. Now, as you do this work in the morning, don't speak about it to anyone. Don't even be coerced into speaking to your family about it. You keep it locked up within yourself. This is your prayer. And you want that prayer to be answered, not only for yourself, but for all those with whom you come in contact. And all you do by voicing this is ensure the fact that it won't work. You ensure your own failure by talking about this. You are to keep these principles locked up within yourself and never discussed except when teaching them. This means that if there is a member of your family receptive and responsive to spiritual work, and they want to follow you on this path, then, of course, it becomes your function to instruct them and to work with them until they become as adept at it as you yourself. Ah, that is one thing. But voicing it otherwise is to ensure your loss of it. Now, God is our very consciousness. And this God knows the intents and the purposes of our hearts. It knows our innermost nature. Therefore, it is never fooled by lip service. And so all of the mouthing of truth that we may do doesn't fool our consciousness. Our consciousness knows the depth and degree of our integrity. And so, trying to show off how much we know by telling it to others isn't fooling our consciousness. It knows that we're being a show-off. It knows that we are trying to glorify our egos or trying to sell truth to somebody else who doesn't want it. Our consciousness knows that we do not have a noble purpose in that. We may believe that we are doing good or that we want to do good, but our consciousness knows that that is not true. Our consciousness knows that deep down in our hearts, we already know that nobody wants truth except those who really want it and show it and are willing to work for it, sacrifice for it, give for it, live for it, die for it. Do you not see that that is one of the reasons for these closed classes? I want to be awfully sure that who is sitting in this room, those sitting in this room, want this as much as I want to share it, that they want it, that they hunger for it and thirst for it, Otherwise, I don't want to talk about it. I'd rather go home and sit on the beach and live with it myself than just go around making a parade of it to those who do not want it, casting pearls before swine. There's no fun in that. There's no joy in it. There's no spirituality in it. There's no profit in it. So it is. You work with this protective work every single morning of your life. Work with it faithfully throughout these coming days and weeks and months, but keep it locked up within yourself and show forth by fruitage that which is taking place within you. And then just because somebody says, oh, how do you do it, or what's doing it, don't rush to tell them. Remember, you have found a pearl of great price. And those who want it, let them show by their sincerity, let them show by their studies, by their devotion, that they want it, and then share it. Be as liberal as you want to be with it, but first be sure. All who come saying Christ, Christ, don't want Christ. Remember that the vast majority of those who come to us are not interested in truth. They're interested only in that which can be gained from truth, some demonstration that is close to their heart. Don't be too free with this. Help them with it. Ah, yes, but help them through your secret prayers, through your secret knowing. But don't start spilling this all over. Don't start sharing it until you know that the one with whom you're sharing it is as devoted to it as you are, as deeply desirous of God awareness as you are, not merely of demonstration. Now, God, we are told, is closer to us than breathing, nearer than hands and feet, and it becomes necessary for you to know the secret of life. If you are to follow the spiritual way of life, you must know the secret of life, that which has been kept hidden from mankind and has been revealed only to the few. Moses made the great discovery of the secret of life. He discovered the name and nature of God. Now he knew by the very name and nature of God that it would not be understood if he revealed it to his people, because they were not yet prepared for any such knowledge. In other words, it had come to him through spiritual realization. It had come to him when he was on the mountaintop of spiritual inspiration. It came to him as a divine revelation from within, and he was smart enough to know that just handing it to the brain of a man wasn't going to do him any good and could do him some harm. And therefore, the true name of God was never permitted to be spoken. The Hebrews were given other names, substitute names, but never the true name. Moses kept that locked up within himself, and he shared it with his brother Aaron. Later, as other high priests evolved, people of high spiritual development, it was shared with them. And they, of course, were under oath to keep it secret from the masses. And so it was that from the time of Moses until the time of Jesus, only those who attained the standing of high priests were permitted to know the true name and nature of God. And they were under oath never to voice it, except once a year when they were in the holy sanctuary. And alone, so that no one might hear them. Now we learn that Jesus the Christ was a member of an order that had this secret, and he also was under oath never to reveal it, but evidently feeling that this had not done the Hebrew race any good to keep the secret locked up. The time had come to reveal it. He left this order and took up his work as a rabbi outside of the order in the regular Hebrew temples and teaching outside the temples. And it was his purpose to reveal to the people the name and the nature of God, and he did. It resulted in his crucifixion. Firstly, because the authorities knew that once an individual knows the name and nature of God, he is a free man. He can never be bound to superstition. He never can be bound to slavery. He can never be made the tool of such a church organization as the Hebrew church organization was at that time. An organization that just, well, took the life and heart and soul out of its followers and for its temples and its temple priests. In tithing, in sacrifices, in all-day worships, and so forth and so on. You can't bind a person in superstition or ignorance or any form of slavery once they know the true name and nature of God. But on the other hand, you cannot give that name or nature of God except to those who are prepared for it, for they will misunderstand it, misinterpret it, and misuse it to their own destruction. So it is that once the Master had revealed publicly his message and his mission, it could never die again, even though he died for it, to human sense, the human sense of death. But it could never die again, and he knew it. He knew that once it was released in consciousness, it would travel down the ages until the consciousness of mankind was prepared to receive it and to live by it. So it is that when you come to the spiritual ministry, you must first of all know that the kingdom of God is within you, that it is closer to you than breathing and nearer than hands and feet, so that, mark this, if you mount up to heaven, this God is with you. If for any reason you make your bed in a temporary hell, this God is with you, awaiting your recognition. If you walk through the valley of the shadow of death, this God is with you, awaiting your recognition, and your recognition brings it into active experience in your life. So that If you were with Moses crossing the desert, and the enemy was chasing you, your recognition of God in the midst of you would instantly appear as a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night, because that would be the form of God that you would need at that moment. But tomorrow, you lack food and drink, and your recognition of God in the midst of you would appear outwardly as manna from the sky or water from the rock. And the next day you are chased by your enemy right to the river's edge, and your recognition of God in the midst of you would appear as the opening of the Red Sea. Now remember this. At no point does Moses demonstrate a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. At no point does he demonstrate manna falling from the sky or water from the rock. At no point does he demonstrate the opening of the Red Sea. He demonstrates God in the midst of him, and the demonstration of God appears as the form necessary. In other words, I think we can all agree that Moses himself could never have thought of a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night, nor could he have thought of some magic opening the Red Sea. All he could think of was God in the midst of me. All he could think of was Emmanuel, omnipresence, where I am, God is. And because of that, all that God is here. And that must mean protection when protection is needed, food when food is needed, water when water is needed. Now, this incidentally is one of the major principles of our work. Never attempt to demonstrate anything. Never work with the infinite way to demonstrate supply or to demonstrate health or to demonstrate a home or to demonstrate companionship. This is a violation of our teaching. Our only demonstration is the demonstration of Emmanuel, God with us, omnipresence, the realization that where I am, God is, that God is forever saying unto me, Son, all that I have is thine. And by secretly and sacredly abiding in this word, and letting this word abide in me, we can bear fruit richly. Not by trying to demonstrate fruit, not by trying to demonstrate riches, but by secretly and sacredly abiding in this word. Where I am, God is. God in the midst of me is mighty. Emmanuel, God with us, omnipresence. The place whereon I stand is holy ground. Now, when we secretly and sacredly abide in this word, we need never tell our fellow man of our needs. We need never even tell them to God, for God is omniscient. God is the all-knowing. We only have to abide secretly and sacredly in this truth of God's eternal presence within us, and then let God determine the nature of our demonstration and its time and its manner of appearing. We do not outline to God. We do not tell God whether we want a rainy day or a sunshiny day. We do not try to inform God of our needs. We take no thought for things, but we abide eternally in the realization, where I am, God is. Where God is, I am, for we are one. Now, abiding in that, you are dwelling consciously in God. And therefore, this all-knowing God that seeth in secret rewardeth thee openly. In other words, brings about your demonstration or brings about the manifestation outwardly and openly in whatever form is necessary at the moment and with 12 baskets full left over. In other words, do not believe that when Jesus was called upon to feed the multitudes, that he told God that they needed food. And do not believe that he tried to demonstrate food. That would not have been the way of the master who taught, take no thought for what you shall eat. No, he dwelt in the realization of omnipresence. That right here and now, God is. And dwelling in that, God would appear outwardly as form, whatever form was necessary at that moment. You see, God, the divine consciousness, which is your individual consciousness, is where you are. And because it is omnipotence, it has all power to do for you. Because it is divine love, it is his good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Therefore, you need never tell God or ask God. You need only abide in the realization of God's presence. Realize God as here and now. Then you will know that you can never be any place where God is not. You need never worry about being away from a temple or a church. You need never worry about being separated from your Bible or your metaphysical writings, because it will make no difference where you are. God is. You will never be separated from God unless you separate yourself in belief by not abiding in the conscious realization of the presence where I am. Do you see now why ye shall know the truth and the truth shall make you free? Do you see now that God has never been separate or apart from any of us? Not in any of our trials and tribulations when we thought we were separated from God, either because we sinned or because we didn't know the right combination of words for a treatment, or because we didn't know how to pray. We were never separated from God. We shut ourselves off from God by our own belief in separation. Sin does not separate anyone from God. It merely separates them from the willingness to open their consciousness to God, to God's presence. Poverty isn't a sign that one is separated from God. It is only a sign that they have separated themselves in belief from God, and therefore, thereby, cheated themselves of the benefits of God's presence. Acknowledge him in all thy ways, and he will give thee peace, and all the things that make for peace. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee. Do you see this principle? The principle is Emmanuel, God with us, omnipresence, consciously realized. All these things are true about everybody on earth. And yet, see the tens of millions suffering lack and limitation, sin and disease and false appetite, only because they have not been permitted to know this truth. In other words, this truth was freely known from the time of the Master until 300 years later, when with the organization of the church, it was again hidden from man and for the same purpose, so that he might not be free. Always remember that. The only reason this has been hidden from man is that he might not be free. Someone wants him in subjection. Someone wants him in bondage. And therefore, he must not be told that I and the Father are one, and that God is closer to you than breathing, and that all that the Father hath is yours. And it is for that reason that rules were made up, that you must first do penance, and you must first attend church, and you must first do this, and you must first do that before you could get God's grace. And none of that is in the teaching of Jesus Christ. Right now, I do not hold you in condemnation, you woman taken in adultery. I forgive thee, only go and sin no more. Right now, the thief on the cross is forgiven and taken this very night into heaven. Right now, why? Because the sins of the flesh had nothing to do with God. It has to do with an ignorance of God. No one who knows the name and identity of God need ever sin. They need never steal or cheat or lie or defraud. They need not falsely advertise. They need not take thought for their life. Once they come to the realization of Emmanuel, where I am, God is, for we are one, keeping this sacredly, secretly locked up within him, the Father that seeth in secret takes care of our outward life. And we need have no dependence on princes, and we need have no fear of man whose breath is in his nostril. And we need have no fear of circumstance or condition, because we have locked up in our breast the only power there is. And it is sufficient to feed us and clothe us and house us and companion us and leave 12 baskets full left over to share with those who do not yet know that all that the Father hath is mine. All that God is, I am. And this very place whereon I stand, heaven or hell, is holy ground. And the recognition of this truth turns hell into heaven, turns disease into health, turns sin into purity, turns lack into abundance. This recognition, this acknowledgement. Do you see why, if you start your day this way, that all of the rest of the day belongs to God, and you have placed your life in God's hands, you have placed your care in God's hands, you are walking around with the knowledge that this that is in the midst of you is invisibly pouring itself forth into expression and manifestation. The name of God is I. I am is God. I in the midst of me is God. That is the only thing in the world that is closer to me than breathing, is the I that I am. And that I, held secretly and sacredly in my consciousness, is my bread and meat and wine and water. I have meat the world knows not of. I, that I in the midst of me has meat the world knows not of. That I that I am, that I in the midst of me is my supply. Supply in every form. Supply of companionship, supply of home, supply of health, supply of money, supply of transportation. I, in the midst of me, is the meat, the wine, the water. That is why we need never look to man whose breath is in his nostril, nor seek the favor of princes, because the I within me is the embodiment of my good. But I must remember this. I dare never mention this except in the sanctuary of my own being. I must maintain this secretly and sacredly and impart it only in instruction, and only then to those who have given some indication that they are indeed spiritual students, that they are indeed sacrificing time or money or effort, giving of themselves for the purpose of receiving instruction in spiritual matters. To those we can share freely, but to none others, because of their lack of readiness for the experience. You understand this, don't you? That if you give a spiritual truth to a materially minded person, they cannot accept it. It is very much like saying that Christianity isn't practical. Well, don't you know that all materialists believe that? They believe it's a waste of time to be spiritual because while it's idealistic, it isn't practical. Take my word for it. Take my word for it. It's practical. It's meat, it's bread, it's wine, it's water, it's automobiles, it's airplanes. It's so practical that there isn't a good thing ever withheld from those who understand their relationship to God, who understand God as their supply. You know that God can't give health. God is the health of thy countenance. Do you know that God can't give supply? God is bread, meat, wine, and water. Do you know that God can give nothing? God is all things, and God can only give himself. For God appears as form. It is still God when it appears. That is why, regardless of the abundance that we may receive through spiritual grace, we can never be wasteful with it. We can never be carnal in its use. Why? Because we recognize it as sacred. We can share it abundantly, give it freely, never waste it, because we recognize it to be God. And so it is with the strength of our bodies. We can use it freely, we can give it, we can share it, but we cannot waste it, because we recognize that the very health of our bodies is God itself. The very strength of our muscles is God itself. God realized appears as the health of your body, as the forms of supply. For God is these. And so, we rightly say, I am the bread. Not, I will give you bread. Not, I will give you health. I am the health of your countenance. I am the bread and the meat and the wine and the water. Not, you will be resurrected. And not that I will be resurrected. But that I am the resurrection. I am the power of resurrection. The I am, that which is within me, closer than breathing, that is the power of resurrection. We won't ever organize an I am movement. We will understand that I am. We will love the I that I am. But we will know that it is God, and therefore something to be held sacred, secret within us, not to be talked about, not to be publicized. Let the world see by our fruitage that we have discovered the pearl of great price. Then, when it has given the indication of its sincerity, its integrity, its willingness to give as well as to receive, then share. But also in this same secretness. Do you see now why this is closed class? Whatever God has revealed to me in my life on this path is yours. I withhold none of it. I give it freely as it came to me, but I give it as sacredly and as secretly as it came to me, and I urge that sacredness and that secrecy upon you. It is for this reason that meditation plays so important part in our life. In meditation, we contemplate these truths. In meditation, we remind ourselves of these truths. In meditation, we bring them to conscious remembrance, and then we keep the finger on the lips and let the fruitage show forth what has taken place within us, in the inner temple of our being. Because you must remember, your consciousness is the temple of God because God abides there. Your body is the temple of God because your consciousness is the very source and essence and substance of your body. Your body is not something separate and apart from your consciousness. Your consciousness is formed as your body. And therefore, your body is a sacred temple. It is not to be lightly spoken of or lightly dealt with. Your body is the sacred abiding place of God, because God is your consciousness, and your consciousness forms your body. And therefore you, body and soul and consciousness, you are the temple of God, and God abides in you. And I am his name. Until 7:30 tomorrow evening.